Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guest on With Respect is Holly Lawson. Holly is a member of an organization that is trying to help teachers and parents when they're bringing their kids into the concept of reading. How do we get kids interested in reading? And their particular approach is called Drawing Children into Reading. We'll be talking with her about her work, her background, and how art can bring a new dimension into teaching kids how to read and love it. This is John Smetanka. Our guest is Holly Lawson, and we'll be right back. Holly, how are you today?
I'm well, thanks.
Good.
How are you doing today?
I am alive. It's a little cloudy and a little drizzly, but that's all right. It's what we get at living in West Michigan.
That's right.
So, Holly, tell me about yourself. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Newfoundland, Canada.
Oh, I've been wanting to talk to somebody from Newfoundland for a long time.
All right, you found her.
Tell me about your background and I'll tell you why.
Well, I was born there and I moved to Rhode Island when I was three with my parents, and I spent 21 years in Rhode Island and found myself going to the University of Rhode Island for a bachelor's of English, and then realized that I loved doing graphic design. So I went back to school to the Illinois Institute of Art in Chicago. And that's where I met my husband, and we ended up moving here to South Haven, Michigan. And that's where I am today.
So, Holly, the reason I'm so interested in Newfoundland is I have always wanted to go there. And there is a great show that I watched all the way through, the Kingdom or the Republic of Doyle. I don't know if you ever saw that. It's on one of the cables. It's all set in St. John's, Newfoundland. And they highlight not only the interesting murders and whatnot, detective stories, but the looking at St. John's, and they just do a great job with the videos, the landscapes. It's just someplace you want to go. So I don't know. Yeah. You're at three. You probably didn't remember much about Newfoundland.
I didn't, but I visited there often after I was three because half of my family, my dad's whole side, is from Newfoundland. So I have 9 uncles and 4 aunts and many, many cousins. And my grandmother, who just turned 99, still lives up there. So I'm very familiar with Newfoundland.
How can you move away from Newfoundland once you've been up there? It seems so beautiful.
It is. It's very picturesque, but what I had available as far as sports and schooling and everything in the States was, a lot more farther along, and there was just a lot more available for us. And my mom's whole side of the family lives in Rhode Island, so I had a lot of reasons to come back to Rhode Island as well. So.
All right. So, what kind of sports did you get involved in?
I was a gymnast for 14 years, actually. It was everything when I was growing up. I was either in the gym or I was doing ballet and, went to States. And I took that through, all the way through high school, and then kind of got out of it after my coach decided to teach the college team, and he stopped teaching at our private gym, and I kind of lost the fire after he left. So, but it was an amazing adventure just being in gymnastics and the
What did you get out of gymnastics? Why gymnastics? Why did you like that?
I just appreciated the strength that I gained from it physically. I had a wonderful coach that really pushed us to be the best we could be, and me a lot of fluidity in my movements, sense and rhythm and all of that today. So it's actually, it had a lot of transferable skills that I use today, you know, and persevering through difficult times. You know, there would be certain moves that would take me a long time to get, and eventually I would get it. Just that overall feeling of accomplishment, you know, was inherent in doing gymnastics skills and, you know, advancing what you did the previous week. So, you know, it's a good lesson for life. And it was a wonderful thing.
Where did you go to school in Rhode Island?
I went to South Kingston High School is where I graduated high school. And then I went to the University of Rhode Island for college.
What did you specialize in?
I got a bachelor's of English, but I actually had a minor in theater and art history. So I've always kind of been interested in the arts, but I didn't really have the confidence behind me to draw that I do now. That's actually one of the beneficial things I've gained from, you know, my employment here at Drawing Children into Reading. But back then I was I loved theater. I loved costumes and I loved studying the arts. I was really interested in, you know, the Renaissance period and, you know, the level of detail that went into, you know, the Mona Lisa or, you know, the Sistine Chapel, just an artist's ability to see things and capture them realistically just always fascinated me. So, you know, it wasn't something I was willing to pursue as a full-blown major, but certainly was a nice side note when I was studying all those English books. So,
well, you said you had a hard time getting into drawing, but did you eventually do that? Are you a sketch artist or an oil artist or what?
Well, I'm very creative. I like to do lots of different things with my hands. Before I steered away from necessarily looking at a picture and drawing it, I mean, I kind of was into it a little bit, but nothing that I pursued where I took, you know, classes on it or anything. I kind of felt like there was other attributes I had that were more beneficial to my future. So I didn't really draw as much, but with Wendy, and I've been to many, who's the creator of this company and this program. She has such a captivating nature, and I've sat in on many workshops of hers. So I've learned a lot just by watching her. And, you know, it's really engaging, and she kind of took the fear out of it for me and many educators. And now I can sit down and look at a drawing and just kind of, I don't have that apprehension I had before, because they all look different. They don't have to look like the expert that you learn from. It's mm-hmm. kind of your own personal journey. And so, you know, when you don't have that confidence, a number of adults are actually in this situation where they just feel like, oh, their sister's really good at drawing or their aunt was really great at drawing, but they don't necessarily see themselves as an artist and they steer away from it. Yet it's such a creative expression when we can sit down and do a drawing of something or capture a bird that we see, you know, in the sky or a flower that's drawing. Just taking that fear out of it really does bring a lot of joy into your life, because, you know, the taking a picture with your, you know, your camera, yeah, you capture the image, but it's doesn't give you the same ownership as when you sit down and you express it through your own hand. You know, you're mm-hmm. watching your hand create it. You're looking back at the actual image or the flower or whatever you're drawing, and it becomes a personal experience. And I think that's the beauty of learning to draw, is capturing it and owning it. You know, it's not just a quick photo that ends up in a giant photo library. It's something that, you know, you like this winter, for instance, I'd never drawn a Santa Claus before. You know, I've seen many images of Santa, many, you know, during the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. And Wendy had, she had steered away from drawing holidays for many years, but this year she took a stab at it and she did a Santa, and I drew a Santa for the first time. And I was so proud of it. I actually hung it on the refrigerator as an adult. And I ended up making a bunch of Christmas cards with that image because I was, you know, it was really exciting that I had drawn this, and I never had, and, you know, 43 years, I had never drawn a Santa. And so, you know,
so, you know, back when I was about 12, somebody gave me a set of watercolors or something or other. I don't remember exactly what it was. But for about 6 months to a year, I thought it was kind of cool. And I did my own drawing. I did sunsets. I did mountains. I did seascapes. I never got around, nor was good at, people. But it was fun. Now, unfortunately, as you described, drawing got in the way of my playing baseball, and that unfortunately, drawing gave up and surrendered, and I played baseball.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, what you're saying about how drawing can create something. You are putting yourself into it, not just the sunset, but the sunset as seen by John Smetanka or Holly Lawson.
Yeah.
There was a movie once about Beethoven, and in one of the scenes, Beethoven, who was deaf, was standing and listening or / watching someone performing one of his pieces, and as he was standing there, somebody came up and said, "Isn't it beautiful?" And they got chit-chatting, and of course, Beethoven, deaf, was not hearing the music, but he said, so the man said to him, "What do you find is the greatest joy about music?" And Beethoven said something along the lines, "When you listen to a piece of music, you go into the mind of the composer and you feel the composer. You see the world as the composer saw." So you're inside of his head. And that's probably true of art.
Yeah. Yeah, I could say the same. Yeah, exactly. Because we all have our own ideas of how to express that line. You know, some might be a little more bumpy than others. Some might be really dark. Some might be really faint. You know, it really is how you're feeling and your skill level. That definitely adds to it. You know, the more techniques you get under your belt, the more realistic your drawings become. And that's always a nice element, you know, when you're drawing something like, you know, for instance, people that aren't familiar with techniques of drawing, they may draw a stick figure. You know, and they kind of stick with that when they're drawing a human figure. But when we give children or adults the ability to draw people in proportion, then we get to see a whole other side where we get to see an expression of what that individual could wear. You know, do they wear hats? Do they have glasses? Do they have fancy gloves on? So you take it to a whole new level when you can draw things in proportion and you have the techniques behind you. And I'm not sure what happened or what grade it happened, but it seems like early on kids really love to draw. It's just our natural way of expressing our feelings, our emotions, things that we see, because we don't know how to write yet. So when we know how to draw, we can get those expressions out and be successful with that. But when we add the skills to it, that's really where the magic happens for little people. So if we teach them how to shade and how to shadow and how to draw in perspective or 6 years old, the adults looking at your work are going to be blown away. And you're going to feel really confident about it because you're getting all this praise and you're feeling really good about it. And that's really where we start to see a lot of confidence being built. And that's a really empowering, you know, element to education when a student feels successful. And there's not always times in our life where we have that, especially early on. I mean, everything's so new, letters and words and numbers and equations. These are all new things that are being thrown onto our plate that we're not necessarily familiar with. But when we give kids the ability to draw and feel confident about something, that carries over into other areas that they may not be as strong with yet, you know, but they realize that with some knowledge behind them and some practice, they get better at it. And then they realize it's the same applies in the other subjects that they're learning. So it's a very transferable set of skills that we can give little people.
Well, we're going to be coming back to that in a minute. I just wanted to, are you the an only child in your family, or do you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother and I have a younger brother.
All right.
So I actually grew up with an older brother, and my parents adopted a little boy when he was a baby. And so I have a 19-year-old brother as well.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a break in just a few minutes or a few seconds. But when we come back, I'm going to talk about your family and where they might fit into your background, your interest in art and whatnot, and ballet. And gymnastics. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we're talking to Holly Lawson, who is a person, she's working in a company that teaches reading through drawing. We'll be talking about more about that. We're now back on With Respect with Holly Lawson. She is a part of a company, a business that is working towards bringing art into the world of teaching people, young people, little ones to read and to like reading. This is John Smetanka. And as I say, we're on With Respect. So Holly, when we broke, I teased out about your family, because families can have such a great impact on the development of a young person. And so, but it's also interesting how a family can produce people of wildly different talents, skills, experiences, and life experiences. So what about your brothers? Did they have any art in their background?
I wouldn't say not necessarily art, but very creative mechanically. Mm-hmm. And, my older brother can build anything, from a house to an engine for a boat, run any heavy machinery out there. So he's very creative with his hands, carving. He made these teak wooden bowls for my mom this year for Christmas. And so he's creative in his own way, but it's definitely more of a construction mechanical side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And my little brother, he is really good with figures. He really is. He loves to do black and white drawings, more so where, you know, a playing card or, a video game, something very graphic, you know, like a graphic novel style. So he's always kind of sketching things. And my mom, she was one of those people where early on she was quite an accomplished artist. And then I don't know if she had an art teacher that just said, you're not going anywhere with this, kind of give up. And she just stopped. It's, you know, and it's a pretty common thread in my family. I'd say early on we were all very creative, and then we decided on our path, and creativity or art wasn't necessarily a part of it. And, you know, isn't really so much a part of my mom's life. And my father is just like my brother, my older brother, very, he could build anything, construct anything, fix anything with his hands. So he's very, again, very mechanically creative. But my grandmother, she was a children's book librarian, or children's school librarian, rather, for 40 years. Had her as my school librarian, and she really infused a love of drawing and picture books, you know, like early on. I was, you know, to this day reading to my kids, looking at those beautiful pictures and hearing the words out loud. You know, there's something very powerful about hearing a story out loud. So she really inspired that love of reading with me and libraries and exploring the libraries and all the fun things you can find there. And she actually got me my first job in high school as a librarian assistant, where I used to, you know, check in books and, you know, get people library cards and help them find things and, you know, alphabetize the shelves and whatnot. So
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Everybody in life that I've talked to on this show, and we've done 600 plus shows, everybody at some point has someone or something, but most often it's someone who really gives them a push. They trigger an interest. They help somebody overcome a fear. Or they introduce them to a whole new world of human endeavor. Mm-hmm. Did you have somebody like that, and who would it be?
I've had a lot of really great teachers. Honestly, I'd say one of the most inspirational people I've met has been the creator of this program, Wendy Anderson Halperin. She's not only an accomplished illustrator and has over 30 children's books, but she has this nature in how she delivers her drawing lessons to little people. It's like she puts a spell on them almost. She's so captivating and engaging with how she's talking through the lesson. So I've been here 11 years working alongside her, and you know, it's been a very wonderful experience to have been working with her. And yeah, I'd say she's probably one of the most inspirational. And my mother, of course, she's always been a great inspiration and how hard she's always worked. I get a lot of my drive and my passion for working from her. And I come from a really great family of hardworking people. So I'm very fortunate.
Well, let's talk about Wendy for a minute. Tell me about... how did you guys get together, and you are now working together on this project with drawing children into reading, but how did that, you first come in contact with her, and how has this partnership worked?
Well, my daughter was 6 months old at the time, and my husband had been invited to a tea party of some local ladies that were getting together, because one of them was actually going to be moving to Arizona, and it was actually going to be at Wendy's house. And I had never met Wendy. I'd never met any of these people, because I had only been in this town for maybe 8 months at the time, 9 months. And so I hadn't left the baby yet. I'm a new mom and I was a little apprehensive, but my husband's like, no, let's go out. We'll go out for a few hours. It'll be great. So we come over to the house, and Wendy lives in this beautiful house filled with art. It's just so inviting to walk in and you know, look at all the beautiful things everywhere. And towards the end of the party, there was quite a few people there. So she was rather busy with all of these guests, and she didn't know me, right? But it was towards the end of the night, and I'm getting ready to leave. And she's like, now, what was your name again? I said, I'm Holly. And she said, now, what do you do? I didn't get to talk to you tonight. Tell me a brief little bit about yourself. And I said, well, I just graduated with a graphic design degree. And her eyes lit up. And she said, do you have a card by any chance? I said, yeah, actually, I have one in the car. Just 1 second, I'll go get it. So I ran out and grabbed the card, came back and gave it to her. She said, well, I'm probably going to be giving you a call here soon. And within, I'd say, 3 weeks, she found the card. It had been misplaced somewhere. She found the card. She gave me a call and said, I have just one little project I'm needing a little Photoshopping on. Do you think maybe you could come over and do that? Like maybe spend an hour or whatever. And I did it in 5 minutes. And she was like, oh my gosh, I have a lot more work for you. So that's kind of where it started. You know, I started off as the graphic designer and helping her bring her drawing. So she would finish a drawing, and she has these step-by-step drawings that go with the drawing so that a child can recreate elements that they had drawn with her. So I would take her step-by-step instructions, and I'd take her finished drawing, and I created all these manuals for her, for teachers. And then I'd make banners for conferences and handouts of all these scanned images of these beautiful kids' artwork and their handwriting. So I've been able to intimately combine her drawings and children's drawings and you know, our vision, mission, purpose, and all the, you know, wonderful attributes of the company and weave them together in various forms digitally. And even I built the first few websites that we had. So I taught myself how to use Adobe Muse, which is a website building program. And I've learned how to use iMovie so I can create movies now. And so what started off as a one project relationship has blossomed into 11 years of, you know, pioneering through, difficult waters. Education is a difficult system to change. And
do you want to change it from and change it into? What is the zeitgeist of your collaboration with Wendy?
Well, what's happening right now is technology, as great as it is, it's kind of taken the forefront for children in education. You know, a lot of kids, kindergarten, first grade, are being given iPads and they utilize apps all the time. They create things on the computer. And that's great. That's wonderful. But in place of handwriting and pencil grip and thumb importance. So unfortunately, today, most children, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of children have terrible handwriting. And they have all these crazy grips where they're not even utilizing their thumb. And there's a lot of brain real estate in our brain and a lot of musculature associated with our thumb. Yet a lot of people, you'll go to the grocery store, you'll go to the, you know, the checkout line at the bank, and you'll notice the craziest grips. And a lot of them don't even involve using the thumb. And Wendy calls it having the thumb in outer space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that makes us human, you know, this ability to have the pincher and the thumb pinch things. And there is this magical connection that happens when you touch your pointer finger and your thumb together and you make that connection. That's actually building fine motor connections to our brain by just doing that. So when we get the pencil in the middle of that pinch, and we put the third finger underneath and we get the right grip so that the fingers are actually bending, you know, every time we make a letter or a stroke or whatever, we're building fine motor connections to a child's brain so that they have more pathways for memory. So, you know, technology is a beautiful thing, but unfortunately, they're not focused on teaching handwriting. They're not focused on pencil grip. They're not focused on getting both hands on the paper. So they're utilizing both sides of the brain. And this is a detriment to students. It truly is. I mean, there's so much research that's out there right now to say that handwriting is vital in how we remember things. You know, Stanford has actually proven that students that handwrite their notes, they do better than students who keyboard their notes because of the level of understanding that happens when we hear something, we process it, and then we write it how we remember it. That doesn't happen when we keyboard. So that's kind of why we're here, because we need to marry the two. You know, I'm not saying iPads are bad or apps are bad by any means, because they're valuable. But what we have to get back to with children, and that's what Wendy and I are on a crusade for, is we have to get back to teaching them proper pencil grip, teaching them that they have to form their letters properly, that when they have the right grip, their hand doesn't fatigue the same way as when they have the wrong grip because of that web space. Yep. When it closes, you know, you create strain in the hand. And then when a student is expected to write the SATs or a lengthy assignment, their hand gets too tired and they peter out. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to that practice that our grandparents had. I mean, I talked to my grandmother at length about, she'd be at school for, you know, probably till sixth, seventh grade, and they'd spend hours every day practicing their letters. And she has beautiful penmanship. She looks at her writing. She writes all the time. You know, she likes what she sees. But children today, I don't see that. You know, children write third, fourth grade. You can't even read what they wrote. And you can only imagine how that must feel as a student to write something that the teacher cannot read. You know, that's got to have an effect on their self-esteem.
I used to teach junior college and other practical programs for lawyers, trial lawyers and whatnot. And mm-hmm. One of the things I was struck by is there is an increasing, over the years that I was teaching full-time or in the evenings, two or three nights a week, is there was a steady degradation in the ability of my students to, first of all, write legibly. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And number two, to write English sentences and use mm-hmm. words, nouns, verbs, objects in a comprehensible manner.
Right.
And I remember one particular student I had, a lovely young woman who I graded her test once as an F because I couldn't understand a word she was writing.
Right.
And she said to me, "Well, wait a minute, Mr. Smetanka, you know that I know the subject matter." And I said, "But we'll call her Susie. Susie, unfortunately, in the workplace, you're going to have to be able to express ideas, concepts, and you're going to have to do it so that other people can understand what you're talking about. But this is gobbledygook, what you're showing me." We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Holly Lawson, who together with Wendy Halperin has developed a program for teaching kids how to read, how to write, how to meld art into those disciplines and improve appreciation. And now we're talking about how it just biologically, neurologically makes a difference, how you grip pencil or a pen. This is John Smetanka on With Respect, and we'll be right back. John Smetanka on With Respect. Now, Holly, when we broke, I was talking about how difficult it is for teachers, this is many years ago, to read people's exams. And now the point is I'm hearing that some schools are eliminating handwriting, what we used to call cursive writing, and just letting students print everything. And okay, but at least they're printing it. But I even question whether or not they're missing in the use of their opposable thumbs that you develop when you're doing a cursive writing program. I wonder if they're getting the same degree of neurological benefit, of content benefit, and so on. I don't know if that's come up in your program or not, but I was stunned at reading that this was what was going on in the educational system today.
Yeah, it's quite sad. I mean, whole states have done away with the practice of teaching cursive, but we have seen with various research that's come out that it's starting to come back. And, you know, firsthand, I know, like when Wendy was piloting her second grade program at Maple Grove Elementary School, she was teaching cursive to the second grade students. And the beautiful thing about cursive, it's more fluid. You don't actually take your pencil off the paper as often. So it's actually a little bit easier. And in Switzerland, they actually teach cursive before they teach manuscript, which I found very interesting. But for the second grade students that she was working with, it was a second chance for them to appreciate their handwriting. You know, they had been given a very shortened, condensed version of how to write with manuscript in kindergarten and first grade, and it was pretty illegible. I wouldn't say it was completely illegible, but it wasn't very strong. So when these kids were given the opportunity to start drawing cursive, it was like a second chance of appreciating what they saw when they wrote. You know, and you really see that confidence building. And not to mention there's, 200 years of history written in cursive, mm-hmm. The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution. I mean, if you can't read cursive, you can't actually read those documents. And I think as Americans, that's important. You should be able to access these documents and read them over. But if you can't read them, you're kind of just left to, see what's typed on the screen. Hopefully it's typed verbatim. And it's just a beautiful way to express yourself. And it looks really nice with drawings. Manuscript doesn't have quite the
same. There is a parlor game, which I once participated in at a law conference. In a break, they had a woman who would look at your handwriting, interpret your personality and your life. And I was, everybody signed up for it, but we were all saying this is ridiculous. And darn, when she got to my handwriting, she looked at me and said, "You're a swimmer, aren't you?" I said, "Well, how do you know that?" She said, "I can see it." And then I went on. It was like having your fortune told, for pity's sakes. But yeah. but your idea of expression, you are expressed through your creation, whether it is writing or it is art, or in your case of your brothers, for example, or in your father, the things that they do with their hands mm-hmm. give them great pleasure and are productive. But if they were limited, they were told, now you can only work with a computer on your equipment. I'm sorry, I'll bet you dollars to donuts they're not going to keep it up because it doesn't give the tactile pleasure. And tactile plus in your brain, the relationship to your brain. Mm-hmm. My mother used to say that a person is lucky if they have a hobby. And if their hobby is their work and their work is their hobby, they are blessed people. But the hobby concept that she said is every man who works with his or her, in case of women, brain needs a manual thing to do. And vice versa, if you're working with your hands all the time, you need to develop the brain as well. And the typical thing was I started watching people and I noticed that at conferences, often I would see people while they're listening to the lecture or whatever, in some cases it was knitting. I saw people knitting or working other forms of creative work, sketching. They sketched people, they sketched lectures, lecturers, I should say. And so I saw, again, what you're saying. There's a mixture. There is a symbiotic relationship between thinking, the spirit, the art, and the writing.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but the creative mind, has the ability to reframe what we can see, what, you've seen a number of times. Somebody that doesn't have that creative mind, they're going to see it the same way every time. We have a lot of really giant issues that are facing this planet. And without that creative lens, how are we expected to solve them? So it's imperative that we give that creative element to students, that it should carry them through all the way through their life, really, but giving them the skills early on and developing that so that they feel confident and taking it seriously as a literacy form, just as writing is, or mathematics or science, drawing is important, to be able to visually convey meaning. So, it's just something that I feel very passionate about, and I've seen in my own children how it's benefited their lives, and getting back to the root of drawing myself and how much pleasure that brings to me, or from having a stressful day, just sitting down and coloring for a little while, how that can just alleviate.
So now what are you doing as an enterprise, you and Wendy?
Well, we have a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit. We've been a nonprofit now since 2015. And so what we have done over the last year and a half is Wendy has over 600 step-by-step drawing lessons for preschool and up. And I've been working closely with the web developers and the editors to bring her work onto our website so the world can enjoy this program. So we've actually had it available for free as our part for during COVID as a resource for educators so that they can bring that visual element, that writing element, that fine motor element into the classroom. And so she's worked with educators so that the program that we teach is aligned to what teachers of those grade levels are already teaching in the classroom. So instead of pulling up a Google image, you can sit down with the kids, a box of 64 crayons and your pencil, and you could draw it. You know, what a better way to learn the water cycle by drawing the water cycle than by looking at a Google image. You know, it just doesn't have that ownership factor that we were talking about earlier. And you know, it's kind of an interesting idea that when we draw it, we remember it. So even, you know, when you're recalling, you're in a test and you're supposed to be telling somebody about the water cycle, you're looking back at that drawing, that image in your brain, and you're pulling certain details out, whether it's the labeling or it's, you know, the rain falling on the mountaintops or the mountains, you know, melting and forming the rivers. I mean, you're getting this visual. So the beautiful thing about the delivery is it's actually hitting the audio learners because Wendy's actually talking as though her hand is animated through the whole video. And the video is of her hand. So it's not her talking or on a blackboard or anything. It's actually her fingers, line by line, drawing this. And she gives a slight pause after each line. So the students will then follow and mirror her line. And then they sit still for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes, quietly engaged. And then the beautiful thing is we take those drawings. And then in first and second grade, we use them as writing prompts. So, you know, you were studying the tropical rainforest and you drew a chameleon. And now you draw this beautiful chameleon, you learn about the chameleon and where it lives. And then the lesson's over. And then the teacher says, okay, so let's pretend that we have a pet chameleon in the classroom. And we all go home for the evening and the chameleon gets out of his cage. Now, the teacher breaks the students up into a few different groups, and one group, the chameleon went to the principal's office, and in one group, the chameleon went to the art room, and then another one, it went to the janitor's supply closet, you know, or wherever they happened to go. But then they write stories about that chameleon and the adventure of that chameleon, you know, and then they get back together as a group, and then they talk about the adventures of this chameleon, and then they write a book about it. So we're using drawing as a prompt to visualize details in the story. And, you know, the great writers of the world are the great, you know, the visionaries, the ones that can see the details and drawing with, you know, with actual sketching, but using shading, shadowing, perspective, proportion, using all of these techniques, you get these illustrations that you can pull a lot of specific details from so that they transfer into the writing and they make it easier for the students to write. And what we say in the program, we draw, write, and read. So we teach the kids how to draw. Then we're teaching them how to write alongside by labeling and diagramming and writing simple sentences with the drawings. And then once they can draw and they can write, they can read. It's just kind of, that's the evolutionary process we believe in. You know, the reading generally doesn't come before the writing. Not for every kid. Sometimes it does. But the writing, if you can write, you can read. So that's kind of how we like to structure it. We give kids the skills. We teach them how to write really beautifully so they want to keep writing. And we slow them way down so that it's, you know, every time the pencil changes directions, you stop. So you don't just do a sloppy R. You do a nice straight line and then you do a nice curve. And that's how she teaches handwriting. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing. It really is. And the confidence that comes from it is out of this world. I mean, these children, they have a whole different self-concept of themselves because every week they see themselves getting better. Their lines are stronger. You know, they're not as wavy. They're able to make beautiful parallel lines. They can change their pressure so that they can get shading that looks more real. And it just really builds that growth mindset. You know, they work through a mistake. They'll just quickly erase it. It's not a big deal. And they keep going and they realize, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. You just keep going. And again, that's a beautiful lesson for them throughout their whole life.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned in a parallel, before we take a break on a quick parallel, I was in a parent teacher conference at one point and checking on how, you know, my daughter was doing, and this fellow who was teaching English told me, I said, well, you know, do you folks use the diagramming sentences as a part of your teaching, which is what I was, both in the public and private schools that I went to school at, that was a big deal, diagram mm-hmm. sentences. Yeah. Well, at any rate, this guy looked at me like I was slightly daft and very old and said, no, we've gone beyond that now. We think more in terms of concepts, and we let them think through. They don't write. They don't diagram sentence. They use words that are alive, and they think method. And I thought, that sounds like Harold Hill and the Music Man. I'm sorry. Anyway, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to come back and talk some more about reading and people, young people and old people. This is John Smetanka. We're talking to Holly Lawson, who is working with her business partner, Wendy Halperin, in drawing into reading, drawing kids into reading. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Holly Lawson, who is working with her business partner, Wendy Halperin, in a program called Drawing Kids into Reading. And I may have butchered the title, but that's the concept we've been talking about. So, Holly, when we broke, I had given this sort of homey and very irritating experience that I had, where my daughter was given this think method for learning how to read and how to organize and write sentences. I thought, oh, man. By the way, that teacher was not around very long. But the whole point, what do you think about that?
Well, I appreciate the think method, but I think you need to take it one step farther. I think, you know, to really understand concepts, you need to jot it down how you remember it. And maybe you cross out a word and you put a better word in there. Maybe you draw a little sketch by it. But the words alone or the ideas alone, that there's not enough pathways to that memory, in my opinion. You know, the more senses we can bring into information, you know, so it's great. You're using your brain. Now, if you could see something and then you can hear something about it and then you can construct something about it, then you're offering three additional pathways to that information. So, you know, I think the think method's great. Everyone sits around and they kind of have a brainstorming session. I think that's powerful, especially in a group setting. But if you don't take it that one step farther, they're kind of like thought bubbles. They're just out there. You know, they're not something that you're visually looking at or, you know, putting lines out, radiating out from it, that it tied to that, you know, overall meaning in the middle. So I think that, you know, that's a good start, but I think there needs to be more involved with just the think method. Definitely think, yeah, you're going to need to have some illustrations in there. You're going to need some labeling. You're going to need some concrete words that help you remember what it is you're thinking about.
Now, you said earlier that Wendy is teaching second graders. Do you have a component of your program which involves teaching or helping teachers, or what is it?
Yes, we do. So our program is online, and what we do is we have a three-hour professional development training with educators.
Okay, stop for a second. Mm-hmm. I hate to be very digital about this and very netty, but how about giving us the name of the website?
Sure. It's drawingchildrenintoreading.com.
All right. Drawingchildrenintoreading.com, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes.
So what do we find there when I go in there?
So here we have over 600 step-by-step drawing lessons. And what we would do is we would train an educator to be familiar with navigating the site. And also what we have decided are the best practices for teaching children to write. So we really need to make sure that when they're watching these lessons, everybody's facing forward. So we don't want kids that are facing to the side and having to turn their head to look at the lesson. That's not effective. You know, I'm all for having a creative classroom with how they're set up. But when it comes time to things that they're to be paying attention to and focused on, they have to be facing forward. So that's one of the practices that we have. And then teaching the pencil grip. So teaching the educators about their pencil grip and how crucial it is for them, even if they've had the wrong grip their whole life, when they're modeling it to their students, it's imperative that they're modeling the proper grip. Otherwise, they're reinforcing the wrong grip to 25 kids every year. So that's a big part of it. Another big element is doing the sight word practice, a 15-minute sight word practice under the document camera where is modeling proper pencil grip and bending the fingers and properly forming letters and words. And then the drawing is really a way to build skills, the hand-eye coordination, the near-far perceptual skills, the observational skills, and then all the techniques that are incorporated into the lesson. So it's giving kids an arsenal to create and be really successful in creating, whether that's letters, words, drawing. And then because it incrementally builds in its level throughout the 34-week curriculum, the teachers are encouraged to keep the students drawing in a folder. And then once a month, they actually will have a little meeting with the student and they'll pull the drawings out. And the kids always, they see their very first drawing and they just think it's so funny and how squiggly their lines were. And,
yeah.
You know, nothing really lined up. And oh my gosh, that doesn't even look like a mouse. I mean, they just, they get a real kick out of it. And then they see like the week two, week three, week four, and they look at how much they've grown. And this builds such happiness in these little people because they're young, you know, they're 5 years old. They're just getting into the whole school. It really does build that confidence that they're good at something. So, you know, and that really does carry over into the other subjects. And when we infuse art into the classroom, when we make a classroom visually literate, then the whole class, like the entire school year, can be spent. And once you get those juices flowing, you can see some amazing things happening with these kids. They open up, they tend to participate more. We neat story, but so Wendy, when she first had her very first group of 44 kindergarten students, the first year she started this program, and a couple of years ago, Wendy did interviews. 22 out of the 44 students who had drawn with her in kindergarten and first grade. And she was talking with this one girl, Alondra, and it was just a wonderful, she was a very quiet kindergartner. She didn't want to be called on. She didn't really like to participate in class. She was very shy. And so in this video, it was really amazing. She said, because it was the drawing that opened her up to wanting to be actively engaged in her learning. You know, she saw herself improve and it really built this I can spirit. And she was a junior in high school when the interview took place, and she was in seventh class, national Society, and she did Model UN, and she wants to be a doctor. So, you know, this shy little kid, she was very introverted, and it really brought her out. That carried her through her education and made it more meaningful throughout because of that drawing element. She said, if they could only have this in every class, you know, if they could just draw what we need to learn, then everybody's kind of enjoying it. You get the colors out. You're still learning a lot, but you're doing it in a relaxed and enjoyable way. And gosh, today kids need that more than ever. They really do.
Well, in the days of COVID, I hate to keep harping on this in my discussions with people, but it is true. It is a phenomenon that has changed us, our way of doing things in our society around the world.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that, it seems to me, are not in the long-term benefit of developing young people. And one of them is having them sit in a computer all day in their home or their bedroom. And
right.
calling that learning, while they get some skills and some experiences that they perhaps could not get by surfing the net and seeing what the pyramids of Egypt look like in graphic detail, still they are not interacting with other people.
Right.
I think the subtlety of dealing with other people, real people, I think is extremely important. And I've told people about my view, and that is that whether it's young people or middle-aged people or old people, what I have seen in the aftermath of quarantines is a dulling of people's sensibilities and senses and of their speech. I hear young people, you know, 20 and 30 and younger, that are grappling for words. They get to something and they say, wait a minute, what's the right word? And you associate that with someone who is elderly or has some sort of a mental developmental issue. But I'm sorry, this is not good. And we need human contact. And we need to develop, and I use the phrase thinking out of the box. We need innovative thinking, which you don't are not going to get simply by sitting in your room, sucking your thumb and your opposable thumb, because it's you don't have to use it with writing. You can just it's useless appendage in a computer. Well, that's not quite true. But the point here is we need to continue to develop people's interest in reading, interest in writing, and the most effective way of doing that is to combine, it seems to me, all the senses and the body into whatever development can take place. But anyway, so in the last minute that we have left in our program, tell me, what can people who are listening do to help their students, their young people, their older people, whatever, to improve their enjoyment for reading?
Well,
you got 1 minute.
So getting on our website, I would have everybody who is 5 and up start with our foundation level. It's 34 weeks. You teach one lesson a week, and it will really build those fine motor skills and that confidence. And then if you can tie it to sight word practice, that's really going to hit the handwriting element a lot more and, you know, labeling and diagramming parts of a sentence and whatnot. But that's where I'd say get started with the foundation level.
All right. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. I've learned a lot from hearing about the interrelationship between holding a pencil, between drawing, straight lines, curved lines, motor skills, the brain, parts of the brains that we develop only through the use of those physical skills. It's fascinating, and I thank you very much for the time you've given us. Holly, thank you very much. We've been talking to Holly Lawson, who, with her business partner, Wendy Halperin, talk to kids and adults in a program called Drawing Kids into Reading. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect. Thank you very much, Holly, for joining us. And remember, our mantra, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.